will recognize themselves in a way in some of the topics. And I'm sure that this was your suggestions or were very useful. At least for me, the verb atlas was the most interesting part. You know about the PDT Valex. We also have a Valex dictionary, which goes from the theory to the word representations, so frames for verbs. So this would be very interesting to see how this compares to your verb atlas.
But I'd love to make a comparison, yeah, and to also connect, probably, if possible.
Yeah. And so I would like to leave the space for people who may ask concrete questions or suggestions, remarks. So the floor is to the audience. Either raise your hand, I hope I will see it, or just start talking. Andre?
Okay, I can ask.
Thank you.
So Robert Navili, this is obviously great work. We've been following you, including the BabelNet, and now I'm happy to see AMR, because I was also with some little touch with AMR in some years back. It's great that you are making this big progress, and I'm also happy to hear about this spoiler, the BabelNet 5 version. But I've kind of refocused myself to other parts, and maybe I might come back to semantic role labeling again soon. And the reason to refocus was that what I'm still missing is the next step, the actual exploitation of these automatic labels in downstream applications, and I'm curious, what are the best results that you have seen in practice that BabelNet allowed you to achieve? And similarly, this understanding, I totally share your like passion for sharing the meaning of the sentence explicitly, but I'm still not able if this is enough. You have, at the beginning, you said that to have the understanding of the sentence, we need to have, and then the three things, last of which is the relations between the predicate and the arguments. Is this sufficient?
I hear what you say. I must say that, first of all, this is a dream. So to be able to give an explanation that is understandable for the human is, in any case, a dream. And because it's a dream, I like it. Okay. And so this is the first answer I would give emotionally. But rationally, so if you ask me why should you use knowledge, explicit knowledge, to perform any of these tasks if you cannot show that it's useful in a given application? Well, I can tell you that there are a number of results where each of these tasks, so if we talk about the inherent value of these tasks, each of these tasks is helped by the use of knowledge. And there are results of different kinds, but I guess your question is more on the end-to-end use of these tasks, right? So are you asking, why should I perform SRL in general? Is that your question?
Well, I'm not as negative as you are now suggesting. Like, I'm just asking for the positive cases. Okay. So where SRL has helped?
Well, definitely there are results in machine translation. There are results in information extraction. Definitely SRL is very important when you have to perform event detection and extraction. So if you have to say what's happening, what's going on somewhere. So this is where SRL is useful. actually, in a sense, SRL has been proven much more useful than what word sense disambiguation has in the past. So and that's probably because SRL has always shown performances in the upper range of the F1 score span. So I think, so I would say that, that there are many reasons for performing these tasks.
Yeah.
And one of the, so for me, I'm purely working on any of these topics without any direct interest in applications. But I can tell you that there are many cases. I cannot point to the literature because I'm not working on this specifically, so especially recent literature. But it's clear to me that there are many applications where this would be useful. Yeah.
And your understanding of why it helped is the coarsening, so the help with the data sparseness that it brings, or is really the relations that are encoded in the SRL? SRL.
So what is the question? So
where do these gains in the various applications that neither you nor me know by heart?
You mean again when applied in other tasks?
Where the gain comes from, and it could be simply the reduction of the data sparseness, so that it collapses things together help the downstream application to realize that it knows the particular instance from comparing it to other instances it has seen in the training data.
So I think that the point is that in many applications you have we have seen that if you have training data for a specific task, in many cases you might not need anything else than currently, for example, a transformer and something on top with your fantastic training data, okay, for your specific task. This is the case in many situations, even in situations in which you need a full encoding decoding or I don't know, question answering. So any task in which you can have this data and use it. However, there are two things. One is that in many cases, you might not have this data. You might not have the training data you need. In other cases, either you don't have this data, or if you use this additional information, you improve the performance. And so these are, I think, the two main cases in which you would like to inject this information in some way into your task. It will certainly help if the quality of your inner task, like SRL or semantic parsing, is high enough for your language and for your task, then it will further improve the performance of your task. And plus, it will provide a justification for some of the choices or some, so you can read some of the answers in a more reasonable way. And potentially you could edit this information and reintroduce it in the training process.
So thanks. So if we grossly overgeneralize, the linguistic components such as word sense disambiguation or semantic role labeling or any other task that we have been working on in the past are very likely to be useful in downstream applications if they alone perform in high 80s or 90s in percentages. So the components have to be good enough by themselves and the for the downstream task, you do not have sufficiently large amounts of training data for that task itself.
It's
going to help. Yeah, and the I like the statement about the word sense disambiguation being less useful than semantic role labeling. That's again a very rough overgeneralization.
I didn't mean that. I meant because the performance was generally lower.
Yes, exactly.
Now, actually, we have achieved 80%. So yesterday I gave a talk where I talked about another direction we're following, which is generating definitions for words in context. So we have a work that we just presented at the MLP called Generationary, where you generate, so for a given sentence and a word in context, you generate the definition, a new definition for this word in context. And this works very well. And it's
just
a way
like
to
explaining what the words means. That's great. I like that task a lot.
And you get 80%, a bit less than 80% performance in disambiguation with the standard WordNet based gold standard data that has been used for many years now. And so when I was a PhD student, the state of the art in WordSense disambiguation was 65%. And now we are at 80% with the same data, same inventory, and so on. So 65, you can understand it's very low. That's why probably WSD has never shown to be useful in other tasks. But now that we are going beyond 80% with such a fine-grained inventory as WordNet, it's relatively easy to obtain 90% with a different inventory, with a coarser inventory. And so this is more similar to what has been done in SRL and in other tasks. So now I think we can see applications of WSD where you can show its usefulness. So in this respect, I don't mean it's less useful. It's just hard. It was harder to show its usefulness before when the performance was so low.
Yeah, thank you. So that's great answer to my first part of the question. And the second part was, if you go still back to the understanding of the sentence, the three things, it's word senses, what was the middle one, and the semantical labeling.
So one is word senses ambiguation, one is SRL, and one is semantic parsing.
Semantic parsing, yeah. So the question is if this is sufficient, or what else is missing for NLU?
Common sense, pragmatics, common sense reasoning. I think that's what is missing. So after this is not enough because there's something implicit that depends on the word's knowledge and your way to use common sense.
Yeah.
So if I say, I don't know, my glass is empty, maybe I mean I want some more water or some more drink.
Whatever.
So, but that's not written in the sentence, right? Or in the representation for the sentence.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Some further question or issue or point to discuss?
One more thing I can tell you, meanwhile,
yes,
is that there's a demo that you can try yourself of VerbAtlas. Can you still see my browser, my screen? Yeah. So you can go to VerbAtlas and test it yourself. Like if you type any, currently this is browsable only in English, but it's linked to BubbleNet. So next time I hope to show you a version that can work in any language thanks to BubbleNet. But if I type, I don't know, eat, for example, these are all the frames with the various meanings of eating, also phrasal verbs. And I don't know, eat as eat biting is in the frame of eat biting. And it includes all the synsets, all the WordNet synsets, different ways of eating and biting. And these are the agent, patient, location roles. And also I didn't mention that we also selected selection of preferences for the various roles. And so you expect that the agent would be an animal or a person, and that the patient would be the food, and the location would be a location. And this, then you can also see the links to BubbleNet and so on. So, and you can also, you also have an SRL system here. So if you say if you write a full sentence, the mouse ate the cheese, this is a simple one, but you see it parsed either with VerbAtlas or with PropBank. So this is done at once, basically with the two resources.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Is Dana?
Yes,
please. It's your turn.
Singhalishwar speaking.
Oh, I can't hear you. Is it my fault or is it your system?
I can only hear your voice. Is there a question?
I thought that Zdena wanted to speak, but
maybe you can type it in the chat.
She's muted now, so probably. Is it in the chat or somewhere? No, that's from Andre. Okay, so this is not the case. So is there somebody else who wants to say something?
Yes. Well,
yes, please, Dan.
Hi, thanks for the great talk and great work, actually. I missed the point, maybe you said it, what languages or how many languages do you actually have in Verbatlas? Because I suppose it's not the 500 languages that are Babelnet. So.
I didn't say it because actually the clustering was done only on the English WordNet synsets, verbal synsets. But as a result of this, because BubbleNet includes WordNet, let me draw something. I don't know. How can I do it? Yeah. Can you see my whiteboard?
Yes.
Okay, so let's say that this is WordNet, okay? English WordNet. This is the verbal part of WordNet, so all the verbal synsets, okay? These are actually small DAGs, small directed cyclic graphs, structured, organized. And then there's the rest of WordNet with nominal synsets and so on. But because BubbleNet includes aggregates English WordNet with other WordNets in other languages. Let's say each color is a language, okay? And also aggregates Wikipedia itself. So you have, I don't know, Wikipedia. So each synset in BubbleNet is a superset of WordNet, of the Italian WordNet, of the Czech WordNet, of the Spanish WordNet, and Wikipedia. So once we say that a certain English synset belongs to the frame of eating, it byte. So if we say that this synset here belongs to this frame and this other synset of chewing belongs here, or this other synset of, I don't know, drinking belongs here, then in BubbleNet, the same synset includes the English translations but also all the translations in the other languages. So this frame, which is in a sense independent of the language, contains synsets which are already multilingual by design, because it's true that this is a WordNet synset, but the WordNet synset is one-to-one with a BubbleNet synset. And so a BubbleNet synset includes all the lexicalizations in all the languages. So as soon as we release a 500 language BubbleNet, then you can use Verbatlas if this synset is translated into your language, in your language. Obviously, coverage will vary based on different languages. But if now to show you, okay, so if I say eat again, well, let me use another one. I don't know, type. Okay, type as writing, okay? Write by means of typing, okay. Now, if I go to the, I click on the B, This is the English WordNet synset. This is the corresponding BubbleNet synset, still English, but I can view the Chinese counterpart if it's available, which is not available in this case. The Italian is available, for example. And so here you say, okay, so this synset in Italian is translated into digitare, dattilografare, dattiloscrivere, and so on. And so wherever the translation is available, you can basically parse using the corresponding translations into the other languages. So as a result, your resource is no more bound to a given language, thanks to BubbleNet. And so your frames are independent of the language, even though we started from English, but the clustering is semantic. So these are all the ways of typing, all the ways of eating, all the ways of stealing, all the ways of viewing. And so each of these synsets is multilingual thanks to BubbleNet. And so you can match these frames and these synsets in any language that is covered in BubbleNet.
That's amazing, thanks. And well, one follow-up question that I had, if I get back to your AMR parsing results, would that be easy to like link to VerbAtlas and to all these frames? Because I understand that AMR is not exactly this kind of representation.
Yeah, that's a bit harder because the problem with the AMR, I'll show you. Yeah. So the problem with the AMR is that I have to invert the two views. Is that they use, where's the English part? So they use, for predicates, they use the English prop bank. So you can remove this and add VerbAtlas frame, the VerbAtlas frame of clapping. So for example, here I have clap, probably it's approved brace. Okay, so this is the frame that I would use, approved brace. And so I would replace this English specific predicate with approved brace from VerbAtlas. And I can do this relatively in a simple way because we have a mapping, as I said, you can download yourself, between prop bank predicates and VerbAtlas frames. So this makes this node independent of the language, because of what I said. And so you replace this. But you still have the words here that are language specific. And so this is the issue with the current version of AMR. We are working on this. So this is future work.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Thank okay. You. May I?
Zdenka tries again.
Can you hear me Zdenka? Now, please?
Yes.
Okay, yes, great. Yes, thank you. Okay, so sorry for the technical issues. I have new headphones, so hi, Roberto. I am overwhelmed with the VerbAtlas and with the BabelNet. It's great, and I like it a lot. But there are some points I would like to ask you about. If you go to list of semantic roles, mm-hmm. please. In VerbAtlas.
Yeah, just a second.
You mentioned that they are about 25, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But some of them like theme or stimulus mm-hmm. have then the verb frames in which they are used, right?
No, all the roles are independent of the, do you mean the role set, this one?
For example, let's say the semantic role theme.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Theme. Okay. Where is it? I don't see it.
If you can go to Live Verb Atlas, that would be better if you wouldn't mind.
You mean the website?
Yes, the website.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I didn't understand that. Yes. Here we are.
And if you go to list of semantic roles, please.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And then on the theme, mm-hmm. you have some verbs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For example, the accuse frame, if I click on it, then mm-hmm. I get like a class of verbs. They have a theme as an argument, mm-hmm. as a semantic role. Is that so?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, and I'm still not sure what the semantic role theme means. It's always confusing for me because it's very general to me and I don't know what does it mean actually.
Yeah, so this is a good question and it's a question that I would better ask Andrea Di Fabio, who's a linguist.
Okay.
But I would reply that one thing that I wanted for this resource is to have similarly to PropBank, a description of what we expect to have for a given frame as an agent, as a theme, as an attribute, as a goal, and so on.
Okay. So
for example, here, I guess what you're meaning here is that you're expecting a patient. Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, so I guess I agree. But if there is any, if you see that this is a mistake, it's probably, it requires a different organization of this frame itself. And I think I found some of these, and I mean, it's a resource that was manually created, so it can have errors. So if that's sure. what you mean, I'll look into it. So in fact, this is something that I have not done personally. Even though I'm not a linguist, I like to get my hands dirty, but I didn't have time to do this with Verbata. So if you see that there are mistakes of this kind, either I will find myself probably as soon as I find some time, don't know when, in the next few months, or please send us an email and we'll correct it in the new version.
Okay, I would like to come in touch because we are linking ProBank, VerbNet, WordNet, and other resources for our synonym class dictionary. So I'm interested in it.
It would be great. Yeah, be great. Okay. So I think there are not so many of these mistakes, but I can, if this is a mistake, there might be some. Yeah, for sure.
And one more question, if I may, where do I find the linking page or something? You know, you said that everything is linked to...
Yeah, to BubbleNet.
Yes.
So in the website, I don't know. Let me take any of these, I don't know, answer. I also note that these are super classes. So like if something is an entity, it could be whatever, for example, okay? Mm-hmm. And also one thing I didn't say is that there are also frame specific. Let me show something here. There are also synset specific, I don't remember if I have an example, synset specific organization of roles. So you can have a synset specific improvement of the general role set that you have for a frame. So let me see if I find one. Yeah, for example, this one, consume implies that a material or a resource is consumed, which is not the case with other synsets here. And so mm-hmm. you have an extension of the role set for this specific synset. But your question was how it's linked to BubbleNet, right?
Right.
Yeah. So in the website, you have a link here to the B. And so for each synset, you can see the corresponding synset in BubbleNet, which is multilingual. If you want to use this resource programmatically, there's an API you can download. You can either download the resource itself from here, download a new resource, you download the resource, and or you can use an API online with there's a description here. And I don't remember if the API includes also the BubbleNet. Yes, so you can query the predicate with the BubbleNet ID as well. And you can get the information, the linkage to BubbleNet. You see here. Mm-hmm. So for example, a frame contains the BubbleNet IDs of the synsets that are contained within the frame. And all is linked. So basically we have IDs for the frames. These are IDs for the frames. These are the names of the frames. These are the Bubble synsets contained in the frame. And you can connect them all. So they're all connected, but you need to either download the full set of files or use an API and or use the BubbleNet API if you need to query BubbleNet with other languages. Basically, you have all the information. So you have VerbAtlas represented as a set of frames. For each frame, you have the set of synsets. For each synset, you have the connection to BubbleNet, and then you need to use the BubbleNet API to obtain the translations in the other languages.
Okay, thank you very much. And one more question. Who is the person I have to talk to about linguistic stuff?
Yeah, it's Andrea Di Fabio. but I would kindly ask you to CC me because Andrea is finishing his PhD. And okay. If I need to work on the improvement, probably I will have to either do it myself or ask some other person.
Okay, sure.
So if you keep me in the loop, I will take care of all the improvements.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, just one side comment to the notion of theme. So it's a comment of a linguistic dinosaur, so to say. Actually, when we started to see the efforts in labeling argument by semantic roles, we have always had the impression that theme is something for a name for something which is left over, you know, that if no other semantically well-defined or specified role could be assigned, then the theme, the label of theme, came to the people's mind and they labeled it by theme. I mean, of course, this is not so nowadays, or probably not, but at the beginning, that was exactly an impression which we had. So it's just maybe for fun.
Interesting. No, but definitely. So if you ask me, I never had the time to look into the clustering. I can tell you that as a non-linguist, the only thing I can tell you is that if you, we have in the same paper, we show that if you use, maybe I have the slides, if you use VerbAtlas together with PropBank, you improve, you further improve the results. Yeah, I have the slides. Maybe I can show you just one. Maybe this one. Yeah. So
yeah.
We created an architecture where not only, so where we output both the VerbAtlas frame and arguments and the PropBank frames and predicates. And if you do this jointly, you further improve the performance of predicate disambiguation by 0.5% and of in-domain and out-of-domain semantic role labeling by point 0.6% here, which is, you know, it's significant because it's a lot of data. But it's interesting because there might be mistakes, and if there are mistakes, it just means that this will further improve because it's noise that we provided to the system. So one advantage I can point to in using a VerbNet style or historical names for roles compared to PropBank ARC0, ARC1 proto roles is that they scale across frames and within the frame. So if I train my system on eating, it will be also able to associate the same arguments, the same roles with other occurrences of other predicates in the same frame. So drinking, so chewing, and so on. While if I train my system on a given predicate in PropBank, it will not scale easily to other predicates because it's not guaranteed that ARC0, ARC1, ARC2 have always the same semantics. So this works. We tried this, and this is a key effect of using coherent roles across frames.
Yeah, thank you. Well, Could
I still have a follow-up question?
Please.
And that is on the maintainability of these resources. So how tedious is it? So when you are doing new BabelNet versions, obviously a lot of effort goes into the new languages and increased coverage in the existing languages, and also some curation of the existing data sets. But in the long term, what is your plan for the long term?
I have a lot of, I like this question very much because in a sense, if you know Raffaele Simone, he's a linguist, and now he's retired, but he's in Rome and I met him recently because I was curious about a number of things that I cannot know as a non-linguist. So he said, Roberto, I think you're a missed lexicographer. because I like improving BabelNet myself, or I, for example, I translated into Italian a lot of synsets myself, and much better, I have to say, than people we hired, unfortunately. So it's very hard. It's, I think you know better than me how hard it is to create a quality lexical resource or a semantic resource. So I can answer this question in many different ways. One way is how we improve BabelNet. Okay, we update all the underlying resources. So for example, this is going to be out hopefully this week, and we're almost done. So all the resources like Wikipedia, Wiktionary, and so on, these have been automatically updated. But this required new parsers, new double checks, but also manual work. Because, for example, the mapping between WordNet and Wikipedia is automatic. But if you check the lowest quality ones manually, you improve the quality of the resource considerably. For example, I remember in two versions ago, there were links between, I don't know, evening and a single called evening. So it's awful. You have a synth set that brings together a music single with the concept of evening. Okay, but that's because you're automatically linking these resources. So if you manually check these mappings, and this is what I've been doing personally for the last few years, you improve the quality of the resource. And so now, for example, the new version will have further improved mappings. So up to 90% of the scene sets that have been mapped have been manually checked, if not more. And the others suffer from a 5%. So overall, it's probably 0.5, 0.3% error in the mapping between WordNet and Wikipedia. So over time, you need a commitment, because otherwise it's problematic. And you cannot submit a new research project on the same topic, because nobody will accept a new project on BabelNet. You know this very well, right? So the solution I found is to found a company. So currently, BabelNet is made sustainable by Babelscape, because with the new ERC, I couldn't fund the improvements over BabelNet. I can fund this research that I just presented, like the creation of Verb Atlas, the improved scaling, SRL, and other things multilingually. So going in other directions that are still related, but not the same. The company is instead improving BabelNet, but also creating an industrial version of it. So building the industry side of the research prototype while still keeping the research prototype totally free for research forever. Because some people, for example, criticized indirectly what I did, that Roberto founded a company blah, blah, to make money. Well, companies all make money, otherwise they wouldn't exist. I'm a researcher, and I never thought I wanted to start a company, actually. Actually, I was, in a sense, forced to create a company because there were other companies or EU bodies who wanted to use BabelNet in a better way, but I didn't have any way to do this with the university. So this gives the freedom to maintain the resource or other resources, and obtain money to create new versions. So the idea is to make sustainable BabelNet via Babelscape. And this is working. So this is the first version, and there will be more versions later, which are higher quality, totally free for research purposes, but at the same time, non-free for the industry, so that we get the money back and we improve the resource. That's the model. It works. But I was criticized by some people because they said, Roberto is no more doing research. No, I'm doing research, as you can see, because these are papers at top conferences. But at the same time, I'm also keeping releasing the resources that have been published and will not be published anymore, probably.
Yeah, so it's not for profit. The company is just to maintain the research.
It's for profit, because all companies are
But your main motivation is not the profit at all, but it's just the money to keep the resource updated and growing. And
it's working very well, because, for example, I don't know in the Czech Republic, but in Italy, to start a contract with a linguist at the university is much more complex than in a company. In a company, in a day, it's done. At the university, you have to start a public process that takes 2 months overall, because you need to give a fair evaluation of all the candidates. Maybe you don't find the candidates, and if you don't find the candidates, you have to restart the process. So it takes forever to do one single to give one single job, while the company is giving, you know, tens of jobs for the
validation yeah. work.
So this is a great answer. Thanks. I have a suggestion for the research part of this. So I had an idea 5 years back. We tried it with a student of mine who has unfortunately left studies afterwards to resolve this in a different way. And the idea was that we would not be labeling with senses coming from an inventory maintained by linguists or lexicographers or whoever, but rather labeling by Google search results. I would like to check with you if you would consider this plausible, because this would automatically make it like up to date. The pages are always appearing. Wikipedia itself is being maintained as new concepts emerge. And now with COVID era and a lot of teleconferencing, new concepts will again like just spike because people are changing their ways of living and working. So if we moved to the Google search results, which is similar to your auto-generated definitions, then maybe the resource would like get maintained by itself.
Yeah, so I think it's an interesting point. The only problem I see is that it's hard to replicate. So, and evaluate probably, because the web is open, and how to say that this is correct and this is incorrect, probably within an application. So if you have an application, it's good. And the other problem I see is that it's a privately owned resource that you don't have access to, or at least you have access to through an API. So you don't have control of this, and maybe you can't, I don't know, you have limits anyway. So
query. Well, it could be any other search engine. That's not it's not the point.
DuckDuckGo. Okay. Yeah. So I think it's a nice idea. I don't see why it shouldn't be of interest. I see it's a nice idea. I'm very excited by this generation, I think. So this is the thing I presented yesterday, and I'll just show you some examples on newly coined words, because you mentioned what to do with new things. Like, for example, generation, I can define love bomb or hot house as an environment that encourages rapid growth of development. Freegan, it takes it wrong because it says it's a person who eats any and all kinds of food, while instead freegan is someone who's avoids wastes. Or even COVID, which was not available at the time of training, it's a drug to treat cancer. But there are also a lot of interesting things, like you can define compositional multi-word expressions.
Yeah, but back to the COVID thing. Actually, there was a joke going in the Czech discussions that COVID is the cure for cancer by killing the people first. So that's...
oh my God, it's awful. I see. Yeah. But yeah, I think that this is a great time for NLP, because you can try many with these deep learning architectures. You can try so many interesting things while at the same time keeping linked to resources like I do. So you can take the best of the two worlds. Like, one is these huge language models that you can leverage. The other is these larger and larger lexical, multilingual lexical knowledge resources. I think a lot can be obtained by this. Like, these are, for example, terms that contain materials, and they're all well defined, like a chair made of marble, a table made from steel, or these are words that are not multi-word expressions are not found in a dictionary, like device driver or USB driver, a software program that controls the use of USB devices. So I think it's a different way of performing text understanding.
Thank you. Great. Okay.
Yep. Thank you. So I'm afraid it's time to close the session. So let me...
That's great.
Well, thank you very much, Roberto. It was a great talk, and I think you also have experienced the discussion was quite knowledgeable, so to say.
Yeah, it's very useful.
Good. So it was certainly useful for us. So thank you again. It's a real pity that we can't take you around the Malostranské Square and Charles Bridge and all these nice places in Prague. But we do believe first that COVID will just not really disappear, but at least allow us to meet in person. And that we also will continue in the Fragellinex series. So these two things may bring you back again.
You're welcome to come to Rome, I mean, at any time, as soon as that will be possible.
Yes, the same obstacles on both sides, I'm afraid. So thank you very much. Normally, I would say I wish you a good trip back home. I can't do that. So I can only say have a nice Christmas, even under these restrictions or restricted conditions. And I wish this all the people present at this seminar, because it's our last seminar before Christmas. So just take care. Spend the holidays as freely as possible. And I'm looking forward to see you on the 4th of January, when we will meet again and again in this virtual form. And we'll listen to a talk by our institute members, Vojta Hudeček and Lukáš Kulhánek, who will speak about end-to-end dialogue modeling. So thank you very much for coming. Have a nice Christmas and see you back in January.
Thanks. Goodbye. Goodbye, and thanks again for the invitation.
Yeah, goodbye.
Hope to see you soon.
Thank you, Roberto.
Thanks, Jan. Ciao. Thanks a lot.